Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the bottom part of Daf Ches Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom. The Gemara will discuss a problem concerning the flow of chelev into meat. Chelev is a forbidden substance that's found in different parts of a slaughtered animal. We're interested in making sure that the chelev substance, sometimes referred to or is translated as forbidden fats, but we'll refer to it simply as chelev henceforth, we're interested that it does not come into contact, if you will, with freshly slaughtered meat. Omar Ameimar Mishmei Derav Popa Loi Lischoif Inish Kafli Imui Bisra. Lo lischof is not to cover or a piece of meat. That's lo lischof inish kafli. Kafli is the section of the animal that has the chelev in it or attached to it. One should not take the kafli, which, as we said, is the part of the animal that has sections of chelev attached to it, and put it on top of ilui bisra, on top of freshly slaughtered meat. It's pointed out in the Tosfos at the bottom that we're talking about literally freshly slaughtered, so that the meat itself is still warm. It still has the body warmth of a living animal. Of course, it's now been slaughtered, but it's still warm, and that warmth would be responsible for the possible absorption of chelev into the meat on which the kafli, the section containing the chelev, is sitting. So the Gemara says, "The doiv tarba." If you invert the kafli on top of the basar, the doiv means flows. There will be a flow of tarba. Tarba is the chelev ubola bisra, and the cut of meat that's under it will absorb the chelev. The Gemara asks, if this is what you're worried about, then ihochi kitritzi nami doiv tarba ubola bisra. The situation that's described here, tritzi, is the simple situation of the part of the animal that the chelev is attached to. Isn't that also a problem? In other words, as we said, anatomically, there are pieces or sections of chelev attached to different parts of the animal. So as soon as you, let us say, shecht the animal, is there not a problem right then and there, without getting on to the opening scenario of taking the kafli and covering other pieces of meat with it? What about the section of the animal itself that the chelev is attached to? Is there not a fear that the chelev will get absorbed into that flank of meat that the chelev is attached to? So the Gemara answers, as far as that concern is, there is no concern. Chroma mafsik mitatoi. Chroma is a krum. There's a membrane that separates the chelev and the section of the meat that it is attached to naturally. In other words, the natural point of connection between the chelev and that part that it is naturally attached to poses no problem, and that's because of this membrane. Well, if the membrane serves to serves as a defense or a blockage between the flow of chelev from the chelev into the meat, then ihochi me'iloi nami kroma iko. Well, what about the opening scenario? We have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of this first top line on Tes Amud Aleph, but that little arrow has an indication that it's referring to Ches Amud Beis. If you skim down to the third line from the bottom of Ches Amud Beis, you'll notice another arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a little Tes Amud Aleph indicator. We are asking concerning that scenario that we had the kafli placed on top of other meat. So if you say that as far as the chaylev is concerned, that it's surrounded by a membrane, then when you place the chaylev on top of other meat, let's read this again. Ihochi me'iloi nami kromaika. So is there not a membrane that would protect the or prevent the chaylev from flowing into other meat? The Gemara answers, Aidi de mimashmisha yoda de tabcha. Since we're talking about a situation where the animal has now been dismembered, and mashmasha means handled, the mimashmasha yoda de tapcha. Tapcha is the butcher. Since there is handling on the part of the butcher is handling the kafli and the chilev, and the membrane miftas, the miftas means the membrane is eroded or rubbed away, and as a result of that it's ineffective at this point. And therefore, when you're talking about taking the chaylev and placing it on other meat, we're talking about a point at which the chaylev has already been handled by the tapcha and that protective membrane is rubbed out, as opposed to the situation of the chaylev in its natural attachment to the original part of the body that, as we said, it is, the chaylev is attached to. There has been no handling of the chaylev so as to create any erosion on the part of the membrane, and it's therefore still effective as a defense. We continue on the second line from the top of Tes Amud Aleph, and we notice a triangle. This triangle represents a series that was started already on the previous Amud, at which point we had explained that the triangles are associated with Maimros of Rabbi Yehuda. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, Talmud Chacham. We should note before we go on that there is also a Roman numeral number 1 associated with Rabbi Yehuda, because there will be another comment or another opinion on the following matter expressed by Rabbi Hananya, who we will be labeling as number 2. So here, Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Talmud Chacham Tzorech Sheyilmoid Shloisha Dvorim. A Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar, has to make special efforts to learn 3 things. 3 things in addition, of course, to his general Torah learning. 1 is Ksav. Rashi explains Ksav means he has to know how to sign his name. And this is important for situations that he's sitting in judgment or serving as a witness. So it's important to learn how to sign one's name. Number 2, Shechita. He's to know, to learn how to control his hands. Even if he's knowledgeable in the laws of Shechita, that's as a result of his Torah learning. Nevertheless, he should know physically how to hold his hand and direct it when doing the actual slaughtering process, u-mila, and to learn the method of performing a circumcision. Rav Hananya bar Shalmiel mishmei de Rav. This is another version of Rav. We had Rav Yehuda's version, and now Rav Hananya's version of Rav. He says, af kesher shel tefillin. He has to learn, a Talmud Chacham has to know how to make the knot in the tefillin, and Rashi speaks here about the knot that resembles the letter Dalet that you find in the tefillin shel Rosh. That Dalet helps, as far as Rashi is concerned, helps to form the name of the Almighty, the Shin, Dalet, and Yud name. The Dalet being the middle letter of that particular name of the Almighty. And Ubirkas Chasanim, he has to learn the brachas that are made when a marriage takes place. We refer to them often as sheva brachas. It's quite apparent from here that we're talking about situations where sidurim were not readily available, and therefore one would have to know them baal peh, would have to know them orally. Vitzitzis, and also Talmud Chacham is expected to know how to tie to make the knots in the preparation of tzitzis. So these last three things that were mentioned by Rav Hananya in the name of Rav were not mentioned by Rav Yehuda quoting Rav. So the Gemara asks, V'idach, what about Rav Yehuda? Why does he not mention these additional three things as expected for a Talmud Chacham to study, to know? The Gemara answers, because these three things he will obviously know. We don't have to make any special mention of them. Hani Shichan, they are common. These are common matters, and therefore there's no need to for the Talmud Chacham to make a special effort to learn them. He'll know them anyway. The Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel called Taboch Sheinu Yodeh Hilchus Shchita Osur Lechol Mishchitaso. Anyone involved with meat preparation, with slaughtering, if you know that he is not familiar with the laws of Shchita, this it means even though you have seen, and the Gemara will point this out later, you may have seen him doing a good shchita, but if you know that he does not know the laws of shchita, you cannot eat from that which he slaughtered. V'elu hein hilchus shchita. And the following are the laws that we are referring to. One, shihia, the knowledge that one is not allowed to pause during the cutting process, the slaughtering process. Two, drossa. Drossa is a downward pressure placed on the knife as opposed to a horizontal cutting action. Chaloda, that's the third. Chaloda is a situation where the knife is not exposed at all times during the shchita. That would be the common illustration of chaloda is a situation where you slip the knife between the two neck organs that need to be cut. We're talking about the trachea and esophagus. If you are to, let us say, slip the knife between them and cut the lower one first, that would be a chaloda problem. Four, hagroma. Hagroma is a case where you slaughter too high on the neck. In other words, there's a region on the neck organs that is considered fit for slaughtering. Too high above that would be unacceptable, and that's called hagroma. The ikor is a situation where the neck organ, the trachea or esophagus, are dislodged or ripped out of place. In other words, when you are slaughtering, you have to cut the neck organs while they are attached anatomically in their natural state to the animal. The Gemara asks, "My komash malon, what is the significance of Rav Yehuda's teaching? Kulhu taninhu, all of these laws of shchita are found in Mishnayos. So is he coming to tell me simply, is Rav Yehuda Mishmul coming to reveal to me simply that which is already taught in Mishnayos? That's unlikely. Loi tzricha, Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel is needed. Sheshachat lefonenu shnayim u'shloisha pa'omim. We're talking about an individual who has already successfully shechted in front of us two or three times. Sheshachat shapir, that means he shechted, shapir means properly. Mahu detema, one might have thought without Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Mide'idoch shochat shapir hai nami shochat shapir, because in the past he has shechted successfully, he will continue shechting successfully, and therefore we could rely on him even if we know he doesn't know the laws of shchita. Komash malon, Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel informs us, kevan delo gomar, since he has not learned, he is unfamiliar with these halachas, zimnin deshohi vidoris, it may happen that he pauses or does a drossa action for lo yoda, and he is unaware that it is a problem. So that even if you have seen him perform a successful shchita in the past, that does not mean you can rely on someone who is known to lack legal knowledge in the future. In other words, you cannot rely on him in the future until, of course, he learns the laws. The Omar of Yudamar Shmuel. Hatabuch tzorf shiyivdok besimonim la'achar shchita. The shaychet, the one who's slaughtering, must check the neck organs after he has cut them. What is he checking for? He is checking to make sure that the majority of each organ has been cut. We've mentioned in the past that there has to be rov. Rov is the majority has to be cut in order for it to be considered a kosher shchita. Omar Rav Yosef af anan nami tanina. Rav Yosef wants to say that this teaching of the need for the shochet to check the neck organs is alluded to in a Tanaic source. And he quotes the following Tanaic source, but let us point out, this is Rav Yosef's attempt. Abaye, a couple lines from now, will say that this does not serve as a support to Rav Yudah Mashmuel. Not that this is a repudiation, but simply the source is referring to something else. Now, turning to the Gemara, Omar Rav Yosef, Af Ananami Mitnino, as we mentioned, Rav Yosef is claiming that Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel's teaching can be borne out by this, the following Tanaic source, Rav Shimon Omer, Im Shoha Kedei Bikur, if a pause in the cutting action that constitutes the Shechita lasted an amount of time referred to as Kedei Bikur, that would constitute a problem. What we are emphasizing here is not the pausing aspect, but the fact that the time frame is described as Kedei Bikur. Now, my love, what does this mean? Kedei Bikur Simonim. Does it not mean the amount of time to check the neck organs? So that however amount of time it takes to check neck organs, if one pauses that amount of time during the slaughtering, that would constitute a problem. The main point for us is that you see here a reference in the Tanaic source to the need to check neck organs. That's what Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel mentioned. Omar Lei Abaye, Loi Abaye responds to Rav Yosef and says, no, this is not a definitive explanation of the source, but rather, Hochi Omar Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan explains differently that the expression Kedei Bikur means Kedei Bikur Chocham, the amount of time it would take for a scholar to come over and check the knife of the person slaughtering. So Kedei Bikur, which means the amount of time to check, is not a reference to neck organs, but rather the checking of the slaughterer's knife to make sure that it is free from any notches. Im Kain, so the Gemara asks back, Nosato Devorecho L'Shiurim, you've made the time frame very subjective. If you're mentioning it's the amount of time for a scholar to come and to check the knife, well, sometimes he lives far away, sometimes he lives next door. The amount of time to come and check the knife would become a very subjective time frame. And when we want to describe the problem of pausing, you would want to offer a standard amount of time. Elo. So here the Gemara refines the pshat, but doesn't change the basic understanding. We're talking about checking the knife. However, Kedei Bikur Taboch Chacham, we're talking about the amount of time for someone who is slaughtering, who himself is a sage, is a scholar. He's right there, and the only issue is the amount of time to check the knife itself. But to emphasize the main point, as far as Abaye is concerned, this Tanaic source that we just read does not contain a reference to the need to check neck organs. It talks about the need to check, or the amount of time to check a knife. That would constitute a pause in the Shechita. And Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel's halacha, that the tabach needs to check, that stands on its own. It's simply not backed up necessarily by this Tanaic source. The Gemara asks, Lo Bodak Mai, following Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel's claim that there is a need to check the neck organs, let us say that the neck organs were not checked. What is the halacha then? Rabbi Lezer ben Antignus, Mishum Rebbe Lozer, Rabbi Yanai, Omar, this is the first of two pshatim, he says, trefa, that if an animal was shechted, and the neck organs were not checked, and there's no means of checking them now, the meat is forbidden. The asura bachila, it's forbidden to consume it. The meat is defined as trefa, trefa being that type of meat that's forbidden to eat. B'mas Nisa Tana, in a Tanaic source, it's taught Nevela. The result of unchecked neck organs results in the meat being classified as Nevela, and the result of that is Umitamo B'masa. The difference between classifying something as a trefa as opposed to a Nevela, a trefa is an animal in general that had some type of organ deficiency, But when it is slaughtered, there is no ritual impurity that is conveyed. An animal that's classified as a nevela, which generally speaking is an animal that died or received an improper shechita, that in addition to it being forbidden to be eaten, it also conveys ritual impurity through tumas masa, meaning in addition to mago, which would be physical contact with it, if you are supporting it, if you're holding it up, even if you're holding it, let's say, in a tray, without actually touching the meat, you still would absorb this tumas nevela. So we just saw two pshatim into what's the result of unchecked slaughtered meat. Bemai komiflgi, what is the basic underlying point of controversy between these two approaches? Why does one classify it as trefa and one classifies it as nevela? So their argument is within a teaching of Rav Huna. The Omar Rav Huna, behemo b'chayero b'cheskas isur omedes. A living animal has the status of something forbidden. As we've mentioned in previous shiurim, a living animal is called aver min hachai. It's literally the limb from a living creature, and if a limb from a living creature is usur, the entire creature while it's alive is forbidden. Ad shivod aloch b'man nishchato. An animal is considered usur until you know how it was shechted, how it was slaughtered. In other words, until you determine that there was a successful shechita, the animal is considered having the status of prohibited. Nishchata, once it is slaughtered, and once it has experienced a successful slaughtering, harehi becheskas heter, it then enjoys a status of being allowed, being permitted, ad shivada loch b'me'en etrefa, until you discover how it became a trefa, until you discover a specific organ problem, hole in different organs or missing organs. But until you discover a specific problem, once it has achieved a successful shechita, it has a status of being allowed. That's as far as Rav Huna's teaching is concerned. What we are dealing with now is an animal that has been, we know it was alive, of course, and at that point it had a status of being prohibited. It then experienced a shechita, but we don't know that it was a successful cutting, because we mentioned that the neck organs were not checked. So what is the result? Mor sovar, the second opinion that said that it's becheskas nevela, it's considered a nevela, he holds, becheskas isur kaima, v'hashto meisahi, it had a status of being prohibited, and now, as far as we are concerned, it's dead. A dead animal, an animal that simply died. As we mentioned, we don't know that it had a successful shechita, so as far as we are concerned, its original status of prohibition simply remains. And a dead animal, in fact, is a nevela, and a nevela conveys ritual impurity, conveys tumah. Umor savar, the first opinion holds, becheskas isur amrinan, becheskas tumah lo amrinan. An alive animal, it may be prohibited to eat. However, a live animal does not convey ritual impurity. So, whatever original status it has, that is that which continues. But to say that some additional problem arises, that we do not say. And hence, we don't say that it now has a status of tumah. Rather, its original status of being prohibited continues. And that's why he classified it as a trefa, as opposed to nevela. As we mentioned earlier, a slaughtered trefa does not convey tumah. At this point, the Gemara focuses on Rav Huna's teaching. And this sugya, this preoccupation, will last until Daf Yud Omid Aleph. So, and we've noted that in our introductory comment that you can see at the outside margin in our Gemara markings, Shas Ozir, which is the marked Gemara that appears on your screen. You'll notice we have from time to time Nosei, which are topic headings, and Mivneh, which are structural notes. In this case, you see we have a Nosei heading, and indicated in parentheses Ad Yud Amid Aleph. Dino shel Rav Huna. We're going to focus on Rav Huna's halacha, and we've, because of the length of preoccupation with Rav Huna's teaching, we have marked Rav Huna with a firebox, a marking indicating the preoccupation with a particular shita or idea for more than an omid of Gemara. So we have written on the side, Behemo, Bechaya, Becheskas, Isur Omedes. This is Rav Huna's teaching that we already read in the Gemara. Ad shivada loch b'ma nishchata. Once it's nishchata, once it's slaughtered, then Becheskas heter Omedes. Ad shivada loch b'me nishrafa. The Gemara will be focusing on the expression Becheskas heter. The Gemara will ask, why does Rav Huna say his teaching using the expression becheskas heter when it could have just said nishchata, once an animal is slaughtered, hutra, it becomes allowed? The term becheskas indicates something additional, and that will be the topic of the Gemara. So, turning to the Gemara, Gufa, Amar Rav Huna, Gufa indicates a quote from something that had been mentioned in a by-the-way fashion above. The Gemara now focuses on it. Rav Huna says, Behemo b'chaya b'cheskas isur amedes, a living animal has the status of that which is prohibited. One cannot eat from a living animal, cannot take a bite out of the side of the animal. Ad shivada loch b'men nishchata. This isur continues, this status of prohibition continues until you know how it was slaughtered. In other words, until you can determine that there was a successful slaughtering. Nishchata, once there was a successful slaughtering, Bechezgas heteromedes, the animal gains a status, a new status, a status of allowance, of being permitted. Ad shivada loch b'men nishchata, until you discover how it became trefa. If it became a trefa. In other words, as long as you don't have any evidence of it having become a trefa, meaning the discovery of some type of organ deficiency, the animal is mutter, the meat is allowed. The Gemara asks, Valema nishchata hutra, why does Rav Huna say that once it's shechted, it becomes becheskas heter, which indicates a status of being allowed? Why not just say that once it's slaughtered, it becomes allowed? And it's pointed out that the expression becheskas has value when you're confronting some area of doubt. When you're involved with a doubt, you want to settle a matter that's unclear. Often we settle the matter based on previous status. So in this case, the question then is Rav Huna addressing some type of situation of doubt that he needs to say becheskas heter? The Gemara answers, ha komashmalon. Rav Huna is teaching us, the afagav di isyalid bo reusa. Reusa is a term indicating something that creates doubt. In other words, that you can rely on this meat that you know was shechted properly, even though a point of doubt arises. In the following few lines of Gemara, we have inserted a great deal of markings, quite an attention to structure. You'll see we have an angular brackets. The angular brackets in this case is explained by the note that accompanies this on the inside margin of the Gemara. We want to note, before reading the purpose of these angular brackets, that we have a length indicator to show how long this bracketed section lasts. This, you will notice, we have a vertical series of dots, a dotted line, a vertical dotted line that indicates how many lines of Gemara are enclosed in these angular brackets. Our note that accompanies these brackets, you'll notice by the star, says as follows. So grayim elu, these angular brackets, enom ledilu, the purpose of them here is not to skip the bracketed section. Skipping is a phenomenon we often use when coming to bracketed sections, but not in this case. Elo, but rather marim, they show the ad kan ikur hachuva, that up till them, up till this point, the last word we read was reusa, that up till this point, we've given the main answer, the basic answer. In other words, the question had been, why does Rav Huna use the expression becheskas heter? The answer is because his halacha covers a case even when a matter of doubt arises. You still can rely on the cheskas heter that was achieved through a proper slaughtering. We've continued in our note. We say besocham inside the brackets muva divrei hesber v'harchova. Within the angular brackets, the Gemara deals with more of an expansion of the idea, the circumstances, an explanation behind this particular answer. So that having been said, we will continue reading the Gemara straight. We said that you can rely on the cheskas heter achieved through a proper shechita, even when an issue of doubt arises. Kidebo mine Rabbi Abba Mirapuna. Like is the case that's contained in the question Rabbi Abba presents to Rav Huna. Rabbi Abba once asked of Rav Huna the following: Bo ze'ev, a wolf came, v'notal b'nei me'ayim, and he took the organs, specifically the intestines of the slaughtered animal. Now here we have a standard brace marking. This is for skipping purposes, because that which is contained within this is inaccurate by way of language. So the question that is asked of Rav Huna is really contained in right after the brackets. The length of these is indicated by the there's a vertical dash dotted line that you can see to the immediate side of the Gemara text as well. Skipping these brackets momentarily, it says, Notlon v'hechziron, a wolf came, took the me'ayim, took away, removed, the wolf came upon my slaughtered animal, he took away the me'ayim before I had a chance to check them out, v'hechziron k'shehen nikuvim, and returned them. The wolf then dragged them back and left them with holes in them. So you have me'ayim, intestines, that have holes in it. Mahu, what is the law regarding this animal? We should just preface, in general, there are numerous organs, including which are the me'ayim, that if they have a natural hole, in other words, after slaughtering the animal, natural is a word that we're using subjectively, natural meaning that without some type of outside intervention, a hole developed. It's not that intestines naturally have holes in them. That's quite not the case. A healthy animal has intestines that are smooth without holes in them. But if you have an animal that after slaughtering it, you discovered, before anything happened, you've discovered holes in the intestines, that would render it a trefa. In this case, you didn't check the intestines out. You slaughtered an animal. A wolf came along. Not long v'herzirin k'shehen nikuvim. He took the intestines away. The wolf then brought them back with holes in them. Mahu, what are we to say? Mi chayshinon shema b'mokom nekev nokav oiloi. Are we to suspect that maybe the wolf inserted its teeth in a spot where holes were originally, and that would be a problem? In other words, the wolf is not responsible for the holes. The wolf's fangs simply were inserted into a spot that previously existing holes had been. Or no. Or maybe we don't say that. And if we don't say that, it means that the holes that we see are holes that the wolf caused. And hence, as far as the animal is concerned, at the point that it was slaughtered, there was no problem with it. That is a question. That's a doubt that may arise. And Amale Rav Huna says regarding that, Ein choshishin shema b'mokim nekev nokav. You do not have to suspect that the animal inserted its fangs in a place that a hole previously existed. So this issue, or let's say Rav Huna's teaching was that if you have an animal that was slaughtered properly, It then enjoys a cheskas heter. It enjoys a status of being permitted. And the issue of status addresses this very case where a doubt arose. The doubt may have arisen because of what we described with the wolf removing the me'ayim and returning them with holes in it, but as a result of the status of permission it had, I don't have to concern myself with this doubt, and I can rely on the status of permission. Before we can go further in the Gemara, we have to go back over the small section that we had skipped. We mentioned that the content of the braces was a problematic language-wise. So let's go back and read the Gemara again from the beginning of the angular brackets.
A wolf came and removed the intestines from my slaughtered animal. Mahu.
What is the din? So the Gemara says, if that's how you're going to phrase the question, notal, ha lesnehu. If he removed the intestines, well, they're not around. We don't see any problem. Why are you bringing in this case to explain a situation that we said there was a leidas reusa? If the case is that the wolf came and simply removed the intestines, there is no reusa. We don't see a problem. Elo nokav b'nei me'ayimahu. Let us say that maybe the question that Rabbi Abba was asking Rav Huna was a case where a wolf came and made holes in the intestines. Well, nokav, if that's the case, there's no doubt here either. We see the wolf making the holes. So the animal would be no problem. Where is the problem? Where is the doubt? Ela, rather the more accurate description of situation of doubt is as follows. Like we said before, notlon, the wolf removed the intestines, v'herziron kishen nekuvin, and returned intestines with holes in them. Mahu, what are we to say? Mi chashinon shemo b'mokom nekev nokav, are we to suspect that the holes were made by the wolf, by its fangs, in a place that a pre-existing hole had been, which is a problem? Oilo, or do we say that the fangs were inserted into a healthy intestine, a smooth intestine, and the wolf is responsible for the holes, and hence there is no problem with the animal? Amale, so Rav Huna answers this question regarding the wolf that removed intestines and brought them back with holes in them. He says, Ein choshishin shema b'mokoim nekev nokav. You do not have to concern yourself with the possibility that it had made holes where holes had been previously. As we continue in the Gemara, we notice a new geometric form, and this is explained by our Mivneh heading in the outside margin. You notice this trapezoid, or that which we fondly refer to as the volcano marking, is called a ma'akav. We've put in parentheses ma'akav. Ma'akav is an attempt on our part to use markings in order to keep track of a back and forth, give and take Gemara structure. In this case, this marking will accompany the Gemara till the end of the sugya. We've also added, by way of explanation, these volcanoes with the narrow part facing up are kushios al tshuvas Rav Huna. They represent questions on Rav Huna's answer. Rav Huna just said, and we've dashed underlined it in our Gemara text for emphasis, that ein choshishin shema v'mokoyim nekev nokav. Rav Huna said, nothing to worry about. These sections with the narrow volcano facing upwards, the narrow part facing upwards, represent questions on Rav Huna's answer, who had said the ein choshishin shema v'mokoyim nekev nokav. When this form is inverted, namely narrow part facing downwards, they will represent tshuvos, answers, meaning points of defense or answers that help Rav Huna's point. We begin with a quote from a Tanaic source. The background behind this source has to do with the fear that some food item came into contact with a venomous creature, and the contact not just that, but rather the venomous creature may have eaten from it and deposited venom in the food item. The source says, Ra tzipor hamenakir b'te'eno v'achbor hamenakir b'avatichim. If you notice a bird pecking away at a fig, or a mouse chipping away or eating a avatichim, some type of vegetation, but even though the bird and the mouse themselves, through their either their beak or their teeth, create holes in the food item, we nevertheless
consider or take into consideration that maybe the holes they made were made in a spot that there already had been holes formed by the fangs of a snake being representing a venomous creature. So what we have done with the markings, we've emphasized with a dashed underline, Choshishin Shemo V'Mokom Nekev Nochav. Contrast this with Rav Huna's teaching, and you can do this easily using the arrow that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, opposite the top line of Omid Beis, where it says Choshishin Shemo V'Mokom Nekev Nochav. Compare this with the arrowed line, three lines from the bottom of Omid Aleph, where Rav Huna said Ein Choshishin Shemo V'Mokom Nekev Nochav. So at face value, we have a contradiction from a Tanaic source contradicting Rav Huna's teaching. In this source, we see that we do consider that where the holes were made now, there had been previous holes. Amar Leih, notice how the volcano is inverted. Rav Huna answers in defense, Mi komedamis isura l'sakanta. Are you trying to compare matters of legal permission, a legal allowance to matters of physical danger to Sakanto? Isura being the realm of that which is allowed on allowed or forbidden on a legal basis. How can you compare that realm to the realm of things that may be forbidden because of a physical danger that they pose? Sakona shiny. The issue of sakona, of something that's life-threatening, that is different. That we treat with greater severity, and hence, in such a case, where there's an issue of physical danger posed, we do consider that maybe where the holes were made now by the bird or mouse, there had been previously existing holes made by a serpent, and therein depositing his venom, thereby presenting a physical danger to us. Omale Rova. Rova, notice the volcano form has the narrow part facing up. This represents a challenge to the answer that Rav Huna gave, and hence this is a problem. This represents a problem for Rav Huna. Rava says, "My shno sofek sakanta l'chumra." What is different about issues of doubt in the realm of danger, where we know we paskin, we go l'chumra, we take the stringent approach. Sofek isura nami l'chumra. In general, when you're dealing with matters of doubt concerning legal matters, we also take the stringent approach. If you have a doubt, is something mutter or usser, we will say that it is usser. So why are you, Rav Huna, making a distinction? Amale Abaye. Abaye now responds to Rava, and Abaye's response will be beneficial to Rav Huna. Hence you see the inverted volcano marking. Amale Abaye, Velo Shani Bein Isur LaSakanta. Do you, Rava, not make a distinction between the realm of Isur and the realm of Sakona? Vaha Ilu Safek Tumo Birshus Harabim Sveiko Tahar. If you have a matter of doubt concerning ritual purity or impurity in a public thoroughfare, how do we rule? We rule leniently. We say Tahar. V'ilu sofek mayim megulim asurim. However, if you have a case of exposed water, that's mayim megulim. There is a principle in general called megulim. Certain beverages that are left exposed, one of them is mayim. There is arises a suspicion that a venomous creature, let's say a snake, may have drunk from the water, and when the snake drinks from the water, he may deposit venom in that water, and then hence someone who comes along and would drink from this unattended exposed water would be subjecting himself to a physical danger. And we rule in the case of Sofek Mayim Megulim, meaning I have water, I don't know whether it was left exposed or not. Rashi on the second line from the top says, Sofek Mayim Megulim, Mayim Shinisharu Megulim Balayla, water that was left exposed at night, Sofek Shosa Mayim Nochosh, Sofek Lo Shosa, I don't know whether a snake drank from it or not, V'kaim Alon Dasiri. So if you have water that's exposed, and I have a doubt concerning them, did a snake drink from them or not, we rule that they are forbidden. Do not drink from such water. So we see, if you use our markings to contrast the dashed underlined expressions tohor, which is a ruling of leniency, that's in the realm of tumo or isur, and in the realm of physical danger, we've dashed on the word asur, meaning that it is prohibited. Amale, Rava responds, and you can see that the volcano form has the narrow part facing up, so Rava's responding to defend his own position, which poses a problem eventually for Rav Huna. Amale, Hasam, in the case of Sofek Tuma that you just cited, Sofek Tuma Birishus HaRavim, the reason that we are lenient there is based on an oral tradition, Hilchisa Gemirila Misota. It's an oral tradition from which I cannot extrapolate to other areas of Esor. There, and only there, we will be lenient, because the laws of Sofek Tuma are learned from the laws that pertain to the woman who is suspected of immorality. The married woman suspected of immorality, she's called a Sota. Ma Sota Birshus HaYochid, just like the entire issue of the woman suspected of immorality is something that takes place in private. She went into private, into yichud. She went be yichud. She went into a private location with another man, and we don't know what actually happened there. So just like the case of Sota is a situation that takes place only Birshus HaYochid, the whole parsha of the Torah, the whole section of the Torah dealing with Sota deals with an area of Rishus HaYochid, of an area of private, an area of seclusion. Af Tuma Rishus HaYochid. So too, in matters of Sofek Tuma, if it's in a private area, only then will there be a problem. But in a public area, there is no problem. That's as far as Sofek Tuma is concerned. But Sofek in Iser, Rava will tell you, Sofek in other areas of legal permission or prohibition should be parallel to the way we deal with Sofek in the realm of Sakana, and we should rule stringently, not like Rav Huna. Rav Huna, in the case of Isur, regarding Trefa, the organs with the holes that we found in them after the wolf dragged it away, Rava wants to say we should rule stringently and forbid the animal. Mosiv Rav Simi. We have a triangle around the word Mosiv. This triangle is accompanied by another triangle later on. These are kashis on Rava. But we also want to emphasize that the inverted triangle indicates that the fact that we're asking on Rava will end up supporting Rav Huna. As we have seen already, Rava above represented a challenge to Rav Huna. If we question Rava, we in effect will be supporting Rav Huna. And that's what these markings represent. So Mosiv Rav Simi. Rav Simi challenges Rava, quoting the following Tanaic source, Sheretz Befi Chulda. A Sheretz is a type of creature that conveys ritual impurity. A dead Sheretz, if it comes into contact with a person or with food items or with vessels, will convey tuma to them. Here we have a scenario where a chulda, another type of animal, a carnivorous creature, is carrying around a sheretz in its mouth. The chulda maleches agabi kikros shel truma, and the chulda is carrying around in its mouth this dead sheretz, and he's walking on some loaves of truma. Truma is a substance it's a tithe given to the Kohanim. It's food matter given to a Kohen. And it's in order for the Kohen to be able to consume it, the truma must remain tohar. Now we have this following scene with the chulda dragging around or dangling in its mouth a dead sheretz. Sofek noga, sofek lo noga. There is a doubt. Did the sheretz come into contact with the kikor of truma, the loaf of truma, or sofek lo noga? Maybe it didn't come into contact. How do we rule with regard to the loaf of truma? Speko tohar. We rule that the sofek is tohar, and Rashi points out it's tohar even in a rishus hayochid, even in a secluded or even in a private domain. V'ilu sofek mayim megulim asurim. But when it comes to the suffix concerning exposed water left overnight, where we don't know did a serpent drink from it or not, there we rule with severity. So we have here a challenge to Rava. Rava wanted to say that when it comes to matters of suffix tuma, we learn those rules from Sota, and that says that only in Rishus HaRabim can we be lenient. Here we see leniency even in a private domain, and yet stringency when it comes to sakona. so that we see that we do make a distinction between matters of sakana versus matters of isur. And to say that the leniency is a function only of public domain, that's not true. Here we are lenient even in a private domain. The Gemara responds, but in effect, it's Rava responding, but Rava's response, we have to emphasize again, will represent a challenge to the original teaching of Rav Huna. That's why these markings are so important for navigation purposes, that even though we're answering a question, the answer to the question is we're answering the question posed to Rava, but that represents a problem for Rav Huna. And this you can see by keeping track of the markings. So the Gemara says, well, Hasal Nami, Rava answers, defending himself, says, that case too involving the Sheretz, Hilchisa Gemiri La Misota. You can't extrapolate from that case of the Sheretz dangling from the mouth of the Huldah to other areas of Isur, because that's also part of an oral tradition derived from none other than the case of Sota itself. What characterizes the doubt in the case of the issue of morality? Well, a major facet of it is the fact that it involves a human being. A human being is an entity to whom you can address questions. You can ask the person, was there a problem or not? Ma sota dover sheish ba das lishol. Just like the sota, which is the woman concerning whom we don't know what her legal status is as a result. Did she conduct immorality with the man or not? She is someone that, in theory, we could ask questions to. And concerning that area, we say that it depends whether it's Rishus HaYochid or Rishus HaRabim. Afhocha, so too when it comes to Tuma, ritual impurity. We should just mention parenthetically, maybe we should have mentioned this earlier, that when we cite Sota in the context of Tuma and Tara, the Torah refers to the Sota as Tumea. The term Tuma is associated with Sota, even though it doesn't have the conventional meaning of Tuma, but rather, the for our purposes, the fact that Sota is characterized as Tumea, we can use her as a precedent for other laws regarding Tuma and Tara. And so the Gemara points out that this issue of the Sufek concerning the Sheretz in the mouth of the Huldah, this and the fact that we rule Tar is learned from Sota herself. Ma Sota Dover Sheesh Bodas Lishol, just like as we said, the Sota, the woman, is someone you could ask questions to. Av Hochanami, so too in the case of Sufek Tuma, Dover Sheesh Bodas Lishol. In order for there to be a Sufek Tuma in Rishus HaYochid and rule it to be a problem, that's only if you're dealing with the Dover Sheish Bodas Lishol. But here we're talking about a Sheretz. Did the Sheretz come into contact with the loaves of Truma? Kikros, being the parallel to the Sota, let us say, Kikros, loaves of Truma, is something you can't ask questions to. In the case of the Sota, the woman who we don't know, did she become Tamea or not, you could ask her questions. But in the case of the Sheretz with the loaves of Truma, the Shaila is, the question is, or the doubt regards the loaves of Truma, did they become impure, did they become Tomei? Well, you can't ask any questions of the loaves. Therefore, in the case of Tuma, we're Mekil, the reason we're Mekil is because it is not something that has Das Lishol. However, and this is the main point we have to emphasize, however, in a case of Sufek Isur, a Sufek of legal status outside the realm of Tuma and Tara, other areas of Isur, like Trefa, like our general topic, you, Rava, will tell you should be Machmir, you should be stringent, and treat it the same way you would treat Sufek Sakona. And hence Rava is reinstating his objection to Rav Huna's teaching, who made a distinction between Sufek Isur and Sufek Sakona. Omar Rav Ashi, Toshma. Notice the volcano is inverted, and this will be then a challenge to Rava, and that's why we have a triangle around the Toshma. We will challenge Rava and ultimately bring support to Rav Huna's point. Toshma. We have a Tanaic source. This Tanaic source deals with water that was drawn for the purpose of Mei Chatos. Mei Chatos is the Pora Aduma ash that's mixed with water that's drawn from a live spring, from a ma'ayon, mayim chayim. The Torah calls it mayim chayim, live spring. Water that's used for the paraduma, this water is mixed with the ashes of the red cow that is burnt on the on Har HaZeisim. Eventually, the mixture of water ash is used to sprinkle on someone who happened to be Tomei Meis, who had been exposed to Tumas Meis. There are rules regarding the water. It is important to note that the water must have been drawn directly from a live spring and not used for anything else. And if you have a situation where, let us say, someone came and drew from the Mayim Chayim, and then he drew some water away and put it back into that vessel, that would ruin it also. That would be considered a form of having used the water. We have a Tanaic source, as we mentioned, dealing with the Mayim Chayim. Toshma Tsluchis, a flask containing Mayim Chayim for the Poraduma. There are two scenarios, and we've labeled them Roman numeral number 1 and later Roman numeral number 2. So a Tsluchis Shenicha Megula, it was left exposed. Ubo Umotza Mechusa, and you came later and found it covered. Tamea, the water is considered Tomei, and if it comes into contact with food, it will convey Tuma to other items. By calling it Tamea, it may be noted, and it certainly is considered unfit then for the Pora Aduma. Wow, why are you classifying it as Tamea? Tamea, as they say, is going even further than just saying that it's unfit. It's simply psula. It's even Tamea. Why are you saying that? Shani Omer, Odom Tomei Nichnas L'Sham. We suspect that a person who was Tomei entered the area where this tsluchis was located, where the flask had been, the kisa, and covered it. So because of this suspicion that an Odom Tomei was involved, was responsible for its being covered, we say that the water is Tomei. Heinicha Mechusa, if he left it covered, Ubo Motza Megula, and he came and found it exposed, uncovered, Im Yechola Chuda Lishtos Mimena, if a chulda, a type of critter we saw him referred to before, a creature, could come. In other words, the water is not suspended, let's say, way up on the ceiling where this chulda would have no access to it. If it was left on the floor, and a chulda could come along and drink from it, oy nochosh ledivrei Rabbi Gamliel, or a snake, as Rabbi Gamliel explains. Rabbi Gamliel says that a nochosh, the suspicion of a nochosh, is just as great as a suspicion for chulda. Namely, if you have a situation, let us say, where there are no chuldas around, but there are snakes around. So, according to Gamliel, you would have to take the consider that maybe a snake entered the picture as well. Oy shiyorad bo tal balayla, or the water got mixed with dew that fell overnight. Psula, the water is rendered pusel. Now, it's important to note here, we don't say that maybe it's tame, but rather the water is considered pusel. When these creatures drink from the water, they drink and allow some of the water to dribble back into the flask. As a result of that, that's called, as we mentioned in our introduction, the water is considered having been used. It was used by the creature, and then water dribbling back into the vessel renders the water unfit for Pora Aduma use. And the issue of the towel, the dew falling in at night, that would make it such that it's mixed with water other than that which is drawn from the live spring. Rashi explains at the lower part of the page, psula, the lav mayim chayim ninu, avol betuma lo mesafkinun lo. But as far as considering them tome, we don't entertain that. The eno mitama achrini, and if this water that was actually left covered and then discovered to be uncovered later, if it comes into contact with other food, it won't render it unfit. It won't render it tome. The Oma Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Ma Tam, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi explains this seifa that said that the water is psula, and we're not choshesh that an Odom tome came in and exposed it, whereas in the ratio we do. So he explains that they should darken shel shrotzim legalos vein darken lechasos. It's the normal way of critters to expose, like to knock covers off of things, and it's not the normal way of critters to cover things. Rashi explains at the top line, "Mitnei shadarkan shoshrotzim legalos v'afagav the odom nami darko legalos." Even though a person also exposes things, it's the way of people to expose things. Nevertheless, ikol limitli, we can attribute the exposure of this flask that was left covered originally, we can ascribe it to Be'odom Tor, Ubishrotzim, Litayer, maybe a Torah person exposed it. Likewise, creatures may have exposed it. Creatures don't convey when they're alive, they don't convey any tuma. Ube'odom Tomei, Litame. There is a possibility that a person who was Tomei exposed them. However, given these two sides, these two possibilities, a side l'tayer versus the side l'tamei, talinan boser ruba l'tayer, rove chances, the majority of chances of something having gone, of something having happened here, the majority point in the direction of tohor, namely, as far as the realm of people are concerned, there are chances that a person that was Torah was involved. And in addition to that, a shrotzim being responsible for the exposure is here. On the other side of the scale is Odom Tomei. So he represents a minority of chances versus the majority that involve Odom Torah plus shrotzim. Rashi continues, V'ein darken l'chasois, but it's not the way of shrotzim to cover things. Hilchoch reisha leko limitli b'shrotzim. Therefore, in the reisha where you had discovered something that was had been left uncovered and then found it covered, the shrotzim variable does not enter the picture as being one that may have covered it. Utmeim utorim shrichi, people that are tamei, people that are tar are common. V'chayshino l'tmeim, and in the realm of, and in that case, we are going to entertain the chashash, the suspicion that a tamei person covered it. Amo b'midi de isura, when it comes to issues of tuma and tara, like is the subject of the poraduma, when it comes to isur, talinon bosa ruba, we will ascribe things based on the majority, the shchichi, ruba de shchichi, the afal gav, the lekula, even if the result is one of leniency. When it comes to matters of isur, we will go, we'll follow the rove, even if the result is a leniency. If you skip the section that's in parentheses here, you would read in the Gemara, the ilu sofek mayim megulim asurim. But if it's a matter of doubt concerning the mayim megulim, those are waters that were left exposed overnight, and you don't know did a snake drink from it or did it not, we rule that those are forbidden. The water is forbidden. Shma mino, so we see chamira sakanto meisura, that our approach to matters of danger is one of greater stringency than the way we approach matters of Isur. Shema mina. Therefore, you can see, as Rav Huna rules, that we do place greater emphasis or greater stringency when it comes to matters of Sakona. And therefore, reviewing the sugya now, going back to the top of Tesamud Beis, there, in fact, we said Choshishin Shema b'mokom nekev nokav. That's because there was a doubt of that the snake had made the holes in that food item that the bird was pecking away at. The snake had been there previously, and that was an issue of snake venom and hence danger. That's in contrast with the issue of the holes in the intestines involving the wolf having dragged them away and brought them back with holes in them. There, it was a question of, not of sakona, the wolf doesn't deposit venom in there. There was just a question of, were the holes there before the wolf was around and that would make it a trefa, or were the holes a result of the wolf? And in that case, since it's a matter of Isur, Rav Huna says there, we say, Ein Choshishin Shema B'mokom Nekev Nokav, and therefore we rule leniently. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.